feeling about sports in particular. But we will see. It's really about whether the court is going to uphold the trans people's equal opportunity in all aspects of public life.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Karen Lowy, Senior Counsel, Director of Constitutional Law Practice at Lambda Legal, was in the Supreme Court yesterday for oral arguments. Will the Supreme Court uphold bans on transgender girls participating in girls' sports? That does it for our show tomorrow on Democracy Now! We'll be joined by the acclaimed Iranian filmmaker, Jafar Panahi. Tune in then. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terrasane, and Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karen, Hani Massoud, Safwat Nizal. Our executive directors, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DiFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Karl Marxer, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, Dante Torrieri, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. Also tune in for our special, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. special on Monday, Martin Luther King Day. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Silverton People for Peace and Silverton Grange. Presenting the 23rd Silverton MLK Observance on Monday, January 19th at 6 p.m. The event will include a community potluck, a keynote speech by PCUN Director Rania Lopez, sing-alongs, and poetry readings relevant to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s mission of social justice. More info available at grange.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland City Council elects a new council president.
Governor Tina Kotek taps Tim Knope to lead Oregon Business Rebound.
And Portland Public Schools voted to adjust Jefferson High School's district boundaries.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 14th, 2026. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Josh Salem. The Portland City Council Community and Public Safety Committee heard testimony on proposed legislation that would require law enforcement officers to unmask, identify, and verify their professional affiliation. The draft legislation is called The Right to Know Who is Policing You. It was introduced by Councillor Samir Kanal, and the Community and Public Safety Committee began work on the legislation in August. During his introductory speech Tuesday, he reminded the audience that, quote, this document is not the end of a backroom deal, but a start of a frontroom deal. Canal described the intention of the proposed legislation.
Big picture, you have a right to know. You have a right to know that a person claiming to be law enforcement actually is law enforcement and not an imposter. You have a right to know which agencies are operating in your city exercising law enforcement authority. You have a right to know if you feel wrongdoing has occurred, enough information that you can file a complaint. And you have a right to know that law enforcement operates transparently and accountably in Portland. So I want to just start by framing this. Who are these people that we see out and about in our streets? We see people masked, smashing windows, snatching people away. We see them using unmarked vehicles with no license plates. In my district, and I imagine all three of the others, we see people being snatched out while dropping their kids off at school and spreading terror and fear in our communities. We see this across the entire country. We see heightened threats to life and safety. Just last week, our country was shocked by the killing of Renee Nicole Good in Minnesota. She's caught, shot in cold blood by an ICE agent who put himself in the way of her car while she filmed him. Her last words to that ICE agent were, I'm not mad at you. I want to make sure that I take the opportunity to say her name in this space, Renee Nicole Good. This is also no longer a hypothetical risk here in Portland. The very next day, we had two people shot in East Portland by federal agents. They're outside a hospital, drove away wounded to find safety from ICE. We also know that when there is no verification and no expectation that a person's claim to be a federal agent is verified, it gives rise to mass criminality. The Speaker of the Minnesota State House, Melissa Hortman, was killed by someone impersonating a federal agent last June, along with her husband, and another legislator and his wife were shot and wounded as well.
The proposed legislation has four components: masking, identification, verification, and documentation. Canal highlighted that, quote, "This isn't a political left or right issue alone." People in the audience held signs reading "No Secret Police" and "Protect the Law, Unmask ICE." Some observers and testifiers say the proposed ordinance doesn't go far enough to fixing the harm ICE has done in their communities.
The alarm sounding off that our community needs something more than just the mask ordinance to stop the injustices that we are all witnessing. The fact that DHS and ICE's methods of shooting first and asking questions later had two of our own community members tragically shot is an outrage, to say the least. I call on all you city elected council members to please, please remember what made you want to be up there in the position that you are today. What prompted you to want to make a change for your community? And did you hold your elected city council members, our officials, accountable when you were where I am now on this side as a constituent on the matters that were important to you, and or like in our case, in a matter of life or death? We urge you to please get creative, make some good trouble, I don't care, but get ICE out of our communities by revoking the permit.
Last November, the FBI urged law enforcement to identify themselves after an increase in ICE impersonators. California passed a law banning immigration agents from wearing masks, as did Los Angeles County. The Trump administration is suing to block that law. You can hear more community testimony at 5:45 on KABU News in Depth.
Today, after hours of debate and 13 rounds of voting, Portland City Council elected a new council president, Jamie Dunphy, from District 1, which covers much of East Portland. City Council started their debate and voting last week and deadlocked for hours, stretching into 2 days of meetings before being interrupted by the news of a Border Patrol shooting of two people on Thursday. Debate started back up this morning, with Councilor Samir Kanal getting 6 votes in multiple rounds of voting, but not getting the 7 needed to win the seat. Other candidates included Alana Pertle-Guinney, Loretta Smith, and Steve Novick. Around noon, Kanal nominated Dunphy, hoping to break the deadlock. Pertle-Guinney was the lone vote for Dunphy in the following round, indicating she would pivot in his favor. Kanal then withdrew his own candidacy and endorsed Dunphy, who expressed reluctance at taking on the role.
I'm going to nominate Councilor Jamie Dunphy from District 1 to be a candidate for council president for 2026.
Councilor Kanal, thank you for the nomination. Colleagues, let me be very clear. This is not something that I have been seeking and is not something I am excited about. But if the only way out of an entrenched 6-6 stalemate is for me to step into this role, then I'm willing, not happy, but willing to do this in service of this institution. I do believe deeply in this new form of government, in ranked choice voting, in multi-member representative districts. The highlight of my first year in office has been working with my incredible D1 colleagues, Councilors Smith and Avalos, to fight for our constituents in D1. And I worry that the longer this vote stays entrenched, the more damage we do to our collective purpose. And that's a reasonable expectation, that we can take turns at compromise, not that only the folks who have historically held less power are expected to do so. But let me be clear. If I were to be elected, I will use this role to distribute power, not consolidate it, to build systems that treat each of us the same and protect this council as an equitable body for our colleagues and our constituents. I really don't want this to be a yearly ritual of hardened battle lines. This has hurt my heart. I want to build a presidency where we intentionally, truly pass the baton with shared leadership enshrined in our structure. The media narrative paints us as along party lines, and it's not accurate. This council has had to count to 7, and most of the time we do. And the last time I checked, the passage rate as a body is nearing 84%. The mayor has never had to step in to break a tie. We agree far more than we disagree. And twice a year we get heated and we lock in at 6-6, but that's a structural problem, not a values problem. The only solution to that problem is a cultural one. And I believe we should have a culture where we share leadership. I'll do everything in my power to make this position less powerful and more of a facilitative role. That means a strong vice president, a leadership team that includes the president, vice president, and committee chairs, one from each district, scheduling that honors a first come, first serve, not a leadership preference for our agendas, and leadership opportunities across the ideological spectrum. This is not my preference. I do not want to be the council president. My preference is still for Councillor Canal to be president, but I want to make sure that we have a body that moves forward. I've always said that I commit to agreeing with my fiercest opponents and disagreeing with my closest friends because principles come before personality. And I want to make sure that the president role facilitates the leadership of council in this government as a legislative branch and empowering each and every councillor here, not one half over another. So those are the commitments I take if I take on this responsibility.
In the final vote, Councillors Olivia Clark and Eric Zimmerman joined the Progressive Caucus members and Pirtle Guinea to win Dunphy the presidency at 9-3. After a short recess, Councillor Clark was elected vice president in an 11-1 vote. With these new roles defined, City Council can move into regular business, which had been on hold while a new president and vice president were decided. New leadership means a reshuffling of committees and the councillors assigned to them. Dunphy indicated to other councillors that he would like to cut back on the number of committees from 8 to 5 and to seat 6 people on each committee, up from the current 5. Those changes are not yet in effect, but they are likely to shake up the committee meetings and their structure in the coming weeks.
The following story has a content warning. Racist and homophobic remarks will be discussed. A Portland real estate developer was caught sending racist and homophobic text messages about Portland city councilors as they debated the new council president last week. Photos obtained by the Portland Mercury show Brian Owendorf texting multiple group chats with conservative political activists in large font as the council meeting was happening. The offensive messages, exclusively used against progressive city councilors of color, were exchanged on January 7th. Owendorf has had considerable influence over Portland's decision-making for roughly the last 15 years. He is known for his role in downtown Portland's Block 216 Ritz-Carlton project and the Darcel 15 Plaza, and he's had consistent input into local politics. One message from Owendorf stated, quote, "And now burrito playing race card," end quote. That message came as Councillor Angelita Murillo, a Paraguayan immigrant, spoke about her experience on a city council that historically excluded people of color. Owendorf also sent and received messages with stereotypes about Asian and queer people. During Sam Adams' term as mayor of Portland, Adams appointed Owendorf to a panel focused on planning the future of the Veterans Memorial Coliseum. Owendorf was fired from a real estate job in 2011, allegedly for posting hundreds of offensive and caustic comments on the Oregonian website. He also messaged at least one current city councilor during meetings last year, according to other images obtained by the Mercury. The progressive coalition known as the P-Caucus, or Peacock, is made up of 6 councilors, 4 of color, who argue entrenched power dynamics leave them fighting uphill to change a status quo rooted in race and gender inequalities. Councilor Candace Avalos told the Mercury, quote, "This is exactly why my colleagues raise concerns about racism during this council president vote. Unfortunately, the bigoted messages sent in this group chat are not surprising to anyone who's familiar with how the power players in our city operate. My takeaway from the group chat is that councillors should reflect more deeply on who they choose to listen to and their own treatment of their colleagues of color." End quote.
Portland City Councillor Loretta Smith is the subject of an unfair labor practice complaint after she allegedly fired her former staffer Adam Murray for his role in unionizing city staffers. In the ULP, filed January 13th, Smith is accused of retaliation for terminating Murray, who was involved in union organizing for the Council Alliance of Workers, a part of the larger Communications Workers of America, Local 7901. Murray worked for Smith since April 2025 as a communications and policy aide. He was fired last Friday. The Council Alliance of Workers alleges, quote, "The termination of a lead union organizer during the fragile initial phase of a union drive is an exceptionally serious act," end quote. The ULP complaint also alleges that Smith and her chief of staff, Elijah Crawford, engaged in a sustained campaign of hostilities, isolation, and altered working conditions against Murray and his pro-union colleagues after finding out about the impending union formation. Additionally, the ULP alleges Smith and Crawford created new policies without effectively communicating them, creating a culture of fear and confusion. Murray states that between December 16th and January 9th, that his boss, Smith, gave him the silent treatment in person, ignored his request for virtual communication, and publicly chastised him in front of other City Hall staff before he was placed on administrative leave and eventually terminated. The City Council workers announced their union on December 17th. The day before that, Murray met with Councillor Smith and her chief of staff, Crawford, to inform them about the coming union news, according to the union complaint. Soon afterwards, Smith and Crawford called for a mandatory meeting for the five-person staff. During that meeting, Murray says both Smith and Crawford asked employees to share any grievances they had with management. Murray went on to say staff didn't share much, but it was a turning point. In a statement to OPB, Smith's office said, quote, "As a longtime advocate for working people and a collaborator with labor organizations throughout her career, Councillor Smith has consistently upheld the rights of employees to engage in collective bargaining as protected under the law," end quote. Smith currently serves as the chair of the Portland City Council's Labor and Workforce Development Committee.
Oregon Governor Tina Kotek has tapped Republican Tim Knope to lead the state's effort to improve the state's business environment. Knope is a former Republican state senator from Bend. He made headlines back in 2023 when he led Oregon's longest legislative walkout. Now he's Kotek's new chief prosperity officer. Knope is tasked with meeting Kotek's goal of finding ways to ease the burden on businesses and to work to reverse a rash of job losses statewide. Kotek said, quote, "Tim is going to be a great part of my team, and I am grateful that he has agreed to step up and serve Oregonians," end quote. Starting next week, Knope will work in Kotek's office alongside other staff, including the new 16-member Prosperity Council, tasked with recommending public policy changes that can make it easier to build and grow business in Oregon and improve the state's reputation for business nationwide. The governor's choice of Knope surprised legislative and business circles this week, with some expressing private skepticism at the choice. During the 2023 legislative session, Knope led Senate Republicans on a six-week walkout that shut down the legislature and raised the prospect that state lawmakers could not find a way to pass a budget on time. In November of 2022, Oregon voters approved a measure to disqualify any lawmaker with more than 10 unexcused absences from serving the following term. As a result, 10 Republican senators, including Knope, accrued enough absences to be disqualified from re-election. Kotek may have struggled to fill the prosperity officer job. She initially pledged to have the role filled by New Year's Day, but four members of the state's business lobby told OPB that inquiries to several possible candidates were not successful.
The Portland School Board has voted unanimously to end a policy that allowed local student families to opt out of attending Jefferson High School and to redraw the school's attendance boundary. The vote puts an end to a policy that drained Jefferson's enrollment since 2011. The dual assignment zones, as they are known, allowed students to choose between Jefferson and three other area high schools. Historically, Jefferson has been Portland's majority black high school. The school board vote on Tuesday puts an end to a string of district policies since the 1980s that have resulted in disinvestment in the school and emptier halls. The changes were made to boost enrollment at Jefferson, which currently has 391 students, an enrollment comparable to some Portland elementary schools, and is slated for a $466 million modernization. Students in the Jefferson District have long had the option to attend Grant, McDaniel, or Roosevelt High Schools. The new zoning map, recommended by Superintendent Dr. Kimberly Armstrong, will make changes to some elementary and middle schools that feed into the Roosevelt, Grant, and Jefferson districts. Board member Rochelle Chase Miller said, quote, Jeff means so much to our community, and I want to hold space for that, end quote. Chase Miller went on to say, it's really an amazing opportunity and a privilege to be here now in this moment when we see the promise of Jeff being restored, end quote.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KABU News in Depth. At 6, it's Flashpoints. Then at 7, listen in for Hard Knock Radio. The National Weather Service has issued an air stagnation advisory for the Portland metro area. Deteriorating air quality may lead to issues for people with respiratory problems. Otherwise, this evening, expect clouds with an overnight low of 36. Tomorrow, the air stagnation advisory continues with sunshine and a high of 54 degrees. On this day in history, January 14, 1973, Major League Baseball's American League adopted the designated hitter rule. The quote of the day is from baseball legend Yogi Berra, who said, "Baseball is 90% mental. The other half is physical."
In national news, politicians sharpen housing and auto affordability arguments as the 2026 midterms approach. Democrats work to engage minority voters who have been staying on the sidelines, and California watchdogs have their eyes on plans for a new city backed by tech billionaires. With those stories and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The governor wants to be petulant and not shake the hand of a partner. That's on him. It's not going to change our direction. Our direction is that the pulse of the membership and what's important to them, we're going to have bills move through the process.
Miami Republican and Florida House Speaker Daniel Perez is downplaying rifts with the governor's office as the legislative session opens. Tensions between Governor Ron DeSantis and leadership are raising questions about legislation on housing affordability, addressing property taxes, insurance costs, rent, and the supply of homes. In Michigan, President Donald Trump voiced confidence in the economy in spite of stubborn inflation, consumer jitters, and slow job growth. The White House says tariffs and regulatory rollbacks are bringing new investments in manufacturing, meaning stronger vehicle production and sales. Half a dozen federal prosecutors have resigned from the Justice Department offices in Minnesota. They say they were told to investigate the widow of a Minneapolis woman shot by an ICE officer. One had overseen the probe into benefits fraud cited by the White House in criticism of the Somali community. California watchdogs say they're concerned about plans for a new city in Solano County backed by tech billionaires. Supporters promise innovation and jobs, but critics say its structure could replace elected leadership with appointed control. Jeremy Mack with the Phoenix Project says ultra-wealthy donors have put in much of the $1.5 billion that has gone to efforts that end up subverting democracy nationally in recent years.
Billionaires are able to use their personal wealth foundations to channel into these different efforts that are ultimately in support of the destruction of democratic safeguards.
Ahead of the midterms, the Democratic National Committee says it's putting nearly $750,000 into voter registration drives in Nevada and Arizona. They're targeting underrepresented communities in the two swing states. Danielle Monroe Marino is the chair of the Nevada Democratic Party.
We can't win statewide without earning the support of young voters, Black voters, Latino voters, AAPI voters, as well as white working class voters.
More Nevada voters now register as independent or nonpartisan than with either major party. Black Democratic office holders there say the investment reflects a broader argument about which party best represents working families. Missouri Democratic State Representative Ray Reed is reviving legislation that would allow qualified DACA recipients to get professional licenses after completing education and passing exams. He cites the case of one St. Louis woman.
When it came time for her to get her nursing license, the state of Missouri said, thanks for paying your taxes, but because you are not a U.S. citizen, we will not license you to be a nurse in the state of Missouri.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
A team from the Canadian military has come to help Northern Manitoba First Nation, which is dealing with a severe water crisis. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A team from the Canadian military has arrived at a Northern Manitoba First Nation, which is dealing with a severe water crisis. One of the reserve's water treatment plants has been out of commission for 2 weeks after a power outage. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
The power was out for days after a power line that ran between two islands on the Nelson River broke. Although power was restored after a couple of days, the outage resulted in frozen water systems, sewer backups, electrical issues, and burst pipes. About 4,400 residents were displaced after the reserve declared a state of emergency. Pimichikamak is more than 300 miles north of Winnipeg. The chief, David Monias, says a 7-member military team from the Joint Operational Support Group based in Kingston, Ontario, has arrived and will provide technical assistance and support related to critical infrastructure.
The Army, with their engineers and their logistics people, are going to be taking a look at the... They're doing a site tour on the water plant right now. Take notes and identify what needs to be fixed and assess how it needs to be fixed and what resources are required to fix it.
Monias adds that nearly every one of the 1,300 homes in the community will need some kind of repairs. And band counselor Shirley Robinson says having so many people forced out of their homes in midwinter is taking an emotional toll.
Like, they really want to go home. And there's that feeling of displacement, that feeling of isolation, that feeling of that they can't be with their community.
Monias says a second military team is due to arrive on Wednesday. Meanwhile, plumbers and other skilled workers from outside the province are also on their way to Pimichikamak to help with water and electrical issues. And Monias says a U.S. company has reached out about sending a portable water plant to the First Nation. It's not the first time Pimichikamak residents were forced to leave their reserve. Many were forced to go south twice because of wildfires. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Indigenous peoples across the U.S. have been swept up in the Trump administration's crackdown on undocumented immigrants. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, an Arizona tribe is taking steps to safeguard its tribal members.
Thank you for calling the Hualapai Tribe's message line, where we encourage you to report any encounters with ICE agents.
The Hualapai Tribe near Kingman has set up a hotline.
Please leave your name and contact information, as well as the date, location, and a brief description of the incident. All information received will be checked and documented by tribal administration.
Hualapai Chairman Dwayne Clark is urging members to remain calm and always carry their tribal ID cards with them. His administration is also pledging to aid its 2,300 members in verifying their identity should they be held by federal authorities. This comes in the aftermath of a fatal shooting by an ICE agent in Minneapolis, also where 4 members of a South Dakota tribe have been detained. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
In the Twin Cities this week, a number of tribes are issuing tribal IDs to their citizens. Tribal leaders have been raising concerns about the safety of their citizens in the area following last week's fatal shooting in Minneapolis. They're encouraging their citizens to carry identification, including tribal IDs. White Earth Nation, Red Lake Nation, Boys Fort Band, Mille Lacs Band, and Leech Lake Band are among tribes holding ID events at their urban offices. Leaders of Native organizations and grassroots groups have been responding to the shooting with community safety plans, as members of the Native community have been reporting interactions with ICE. A community prayer and gathering was held Sunday, and organizers are hosting Know Your Rights events this week. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
President Donald Trump is threatening to cut funding from sanctuary cities again. On January 13th, he said, quote, "Starting February 1st, we're not making any payments to sanctuary cities or states having sanctuary cities because they do everything possible to protect criminals at the expense of American citizens, and it breeds fraud and crime and all of the other problems that come." End quote. There is no strict definition for sanctuary policies or sanctuary cities, but the terms generally describe limited cooperation with immigration and customs enforcement. 2 previous efforts by Trump to cut off some funding for sanctuary jurisdictions were shut down by courts. The federal government has already moved to halt funding for a variety of programs in recent weeks and is facing legal challenges on those. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has warned states that have refused to provide data on recipients of Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or SNAP money that they'll be docked administrative funds. The U.S. Department of Health and Social Services said last week that it was halting money from five Democratic-led states for daycare subsidies and other aid to allow low-income families with children over unspecified suspicions about fraud. The administration has tried to use additional financial pressure against Minnesota, but without laying out many details.
KBOO news poet Dan Raphael wonders what U.S. city Trump will invade next.
I've been looking for the right word and decided Renee Good was executed. To instill fear, to stop folks from following ICE around town. And of course, the FBI will do a thorough and unbiased investigation in a case their boss Blondie and her boss Orangey have already decided. At a time when anyone working in the federal government knows to disagree is to be unemployed, if not investigated yourself. Which distraction is your flavor today? Venezuela, Greenland, Iran, Epstein? Donnie keeps rolling the dice and they're loaded. Portland Mayor Keith Wilson saying of the federal government, there was a time we could take them at their word. That time is long past. Their and others' courage needs to be spread about and amplified by our own courage, ready for the opportunity. Meanwhile, the plaque in the Smithsonian by Donnie's picture for his first term no longer mentions his impeachments. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 14th, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings, Dave Johnson, Anna Wilcox, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Dave Johnson, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Farah Siddiqui and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews.